the home team.
And here we go.
All right, kicking into hour number two, the home team presented by Golden Pantry. Eat, drink, be golden. The Braves have made a pitching change tonight, so it's not Gausman pitching. It is 20-year-old Bryce Wilson, who they've brought up from AAA Gwinnett, the Stripers, who will make his major league debut. That's the third pitcher this year the Braves will have, third starting pitcher this year the Braves will have used who's not yet 21. And these are great names. The last team to do that and make the playoffs was the Philadelphia A's in 1913, who used Bullet Joe Bush, Herb Pennock, and Charlie Boardman, who were 20, 19, and 20. So, well, the Braves are going to try to do that now, too, is start a bunch of kids this year and somehow still make the playoffs. But not getting swept at home would be ideal for making the playoffs.
I believe Herb Pennock went on and had a very good career. That's a familiar name.
He is familiar. I used to have this baseball game on my computer called Earl Weaver's Baseball.
Oh, yeah.
And he was like one of the – I think he's like in the Hall of Fame.
Yes.
He was one of like the pitchers you could use. Well,
we're calling it old Herb Pennock.
Yeah. But never heard of Bullet Joe Bush until
Joe
now.
Bush.
So.
And what was the third guy?
Charlie Boardman.
I think there might have been a modern-day Charlie Boardman. That sounds believable.
While we're at it, the last Braves team to use three different pitchers prior to their 21st birthday was the 1910 Boston Doves, who started Lefty Tyler.
Old Lefty.
Billy Burke and Chick Evans.
Oh, that's a great name. Billy Burke, Chick Evans, and
Lefty Tyler.
That's fantastic.
So anyway, so the Braves have, you know, they've got all these games they're playing with no off days, so I guess they're just giving everyone some extra rest, at least the starting pitchers. So they've called up Bryce Wilson to try and make his major league debut. And I also think he would become, if he won tonight, he'd be the fourth pitcher they've had this year to win in his major league debut.
Well, let me say this about that. Tukey Toussaint's name would go up with any of those guys, including Bullet Joe Bush.
Yeah.
It's a great name.
I guess Tukey's one of those guys then, because they've used it was Soroka, Tukey. And now they'll have Bryce Wilson.
You know, if Atlanta winds up missing the playoffs by a game,
it's Dansby's fault.
Woo,
did
that
you
Thursday
see
night?
Did you see the pitch that he swung and missed? The Saturday game was when they blew. Yeah, the Saturday game was really bad because they were up 3-0, and Rockies had nobody on and two outs in the ninth and somehow tied the game.
That's a horrible loss.
That's a bad loss. But the pitch that he swung and missed on to end the game, you've got to, like, look it up. It's one of the worst swings. It's got one of the worst swings a Major League Baseball player's ever had.
Was it like a pitch in the dirt? Did he chase? Or?
Way outside.
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
Like, not even – like, I think it was even – it was, like, outside the other batter. Like, the dude pitching for the Rockies, I think, looked and was like, I can't believe he just swung and missed that thing.
I mean, so obviously that, you know, that error, it scrambled his eggs. Because you'll always hear coaches will say, you know, if you have a bad at-bat, don't take it in the field. If you make an error, don't take it in the batter's box with you.
Well, yeah. Well, he made that error Thursday.
Oh, that's what I'm saying.
Which opened the floodgates. And then Saturday he had that swing and miss. So it was not a good weekend overall for Dansby.
Swanson cost Braves title. News at 11.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, man.
Well, that's
– I
guess Vandy did get their – they did get their one natty, Before that, they had a
some good teams.
Rich history of choking. All right, time to dive into today's 5 at 5, brought to you, as always, by Duplicating Systems. More than a system, a solution. Jeff, let's open it up. We talked about Zamir White in hour number one and his injury. But let's talk about some of the other things that happened at the scrimmage on Saturday that were maybe positive or more encouraging moving forward with the season. Unfortunately, Zamir will be out for the year now. But what are your insiders telling us about how some of the other guys looked? I mean, some of the key spots we're talking about still, the secondary opposite of DeAndre Baker,
mm-hmm.
What else? Maybe sorting out a few spots on the O-line.
Well, I think let's start with the secondary too, Chris. And it shouldn't be overlooked, the experience of Ty McGee, because when you think about that secondary now, J.R. Reed and DeAndre Baker are the only two players who've really played extensive snaps back there. Some other guys have gotten their feet wet. You know, we've talked about Amir Speed and Mark Webb battling for starting positions. Certainly Richard LeCount. I think Tyson Campbell has made a move there. He might have separated himself a bit when it comes to the freshman defensive backs, but that's definitely a spot. I would imagine Kirby and Mel Tucker, they would like to have, I would think seven would be a good number of guys that they feel really comfortable with back there. Linebacker, I think what Kirby said, it was just kind of basically like, to paraphrase, a battle royal there, that you got a bunch of guys fighting for spots. I do think Monty Rice is going to wind up winning one of those inside linebacker jobs. I think one of the when you talk about one of the positions where you know what you lost, but you're excited about what you got is outside linebacker. You know, with Walter Grant, DeAndre Walker coming back, I've heard a lot of good reports on Brenton Cox that he is a big time player. And the weekend you was at the scrimmage. And he just told me, he goes, the thing that stands out to me, he goes, man, our offensive line is just enormous.
Massive, yeah.
And, I mean, when you think about that right side, you know, Brahim, you and I both being wrestling fans of the 80s, I mean, Isaiah Wilson and Ben Cleveland, what are you going there, 6'7", 340 and 6'6", 335? I'd put those dudes – yeah, I'd let them battle a Big John Studd and King Kong Bundy. I'd like our chances.
You do
there.
A steel cage match or just regular match?
And I mean, that is
Fromm going to be able to see over those guys to throw though? Is that going to be an issue?
Where you really worry about, you don't want to have both guards being too tall there. So
the guards are the problem. But,
yes,
well,
usually.
Cleveland would be one of them, and then yeah. Right is sounding like maybe Kendall Baker, the vet, is. So far, maybe holding some of the younger guys off to continue to start there. So,
but there, I mean, you got Natori Johnson, Jamari Sawyer, Justin Schaefer, Trey Hill. One of the things I'll be interested to see, Chris, and when hopefully Georgia's got the game in hand in 2 weeks, is when Lamont Galliard goes out, who's going to come in there at center? Because I would imagine that Erickson, Hill, and Sawyer have all been working at center there. And they'll probably all continue to get looks because Georgia needs to find that heir apparent. But, you know, who will be – I would guess, you know, logic would serve that whoever the first player is to come in behind Galliard would probably be the front runner to be the next center.
Which, I mean, are the odds of that being Erickson?
I would think – but, I mean, they might work Hill and Sawyer in there too.
Yeah, well, it sounds like Sawyer has been working out at center.
I think they want to
sounds like everyone plays every position at on the offensive line except, you know, for now Thomas is the left tackle and that's right. What he is. And, you know, Isaiah Wilson's the right tackle and that's what he's been doing.
Well, I would think the other part of that too, let's just say, por ejemplo, if Erickson does wind up the starting center for 2019, that – they want to have it where if he has to come out of the game, if he's winded or if he gets, you know, if he gets shaken up a little bit, you know, they even if Sawyer slash Hill, if one or both of those guys are in the game, they want to be able to move one of those guys over to center, assuming you've got your five best guys out there.
Right. Now with Zamir, and I know you kept you had the fantasy of like we're going to unleash him against Tech. They won't know what's coming, but prior to Saturday, I mean, it felt like all indications were this guy was going to be ready to play and carry the ball. Who now after Swift do you think is going to get the second most carries this fall? I mean, because before that, I mean, it was probably going to be Zamir, right?
Yeah, I think he was going to be. It certainly as the season went along, you would think so. We got to put that on hold for a year. I would guess Holyfield and then Cook and then Harrion. I heard Harrion had some good runs and Holyfield's had a very good camp. And I mean, Cook's one of those guys. And again, you got to temper it because you have to be able to do everything. But he's made a couple of those just wow explosive plays. And again, if he's anything like his brother, I mean, Dalvin Cook was unbelievable at Florida State.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, but Cook, I guess, Cook was kind of that star of that first scrimmage.
Right.
And or I guess not the first scrimmage, but that open practice. That's where people got to see him and then
But yeah. Here's the thing too. Yeah, and for every freshman. Like Herschel always tells a story, like his first scrimmage or first practice, that he runs through a hole. Next thing you know, he's on the ground and he looks up and there's a really big dude with meat cleaver written on the side of his helmet. That was like, welcome to college football. So the first time, you know, and let's just say when Georgia goes to Columbia in 2.5 weeks and there are 85,000 people screaming against you and it's 100 degrees and the first time you go around the right side and there's some 250-pound linebacker who's 22 years old who goes face mask to face mask and drops you in the dirt, you know, how do you react to that? I mean, for any freshman tailback.
Well, especially if you're like one of those running backs where you would carry the ball like 8 times in a high school game and score on like 6 of them. Yeah,
right. So that's always kind of a rite of passage there. I mean, I would imagine, I just think for everything that DeAndre Swift can do, I mean, I would think the power of Holyfield in there, and then maybe if you whoop, pitch it out to Cook or dump it to him out of the backfield.
Yeah.
I think you got some good combinations you can use.
I mean, I think the thought of, like, Holyfield as fullback, we did get a glimpse of that in that play back at the SEC championship game, just the kick return that he had against Notre Dame.
The guy's just such an athlete.
And he's just – I mean, I remember when we first got here, it's like, oh, yeah, he's Evander Holyfield's son, and the guy just is completely ripped. But now it just all these pictures you see of him, he looks even – bigger, even the ones that they don't, for whatever reason, decide to like doctor and Photoshop to make his arms look bigger than they, you know, they are. Like, he needs that.
Would that be one of those rare cases with a kid like Holyfield? Like, Georgia's strength and conditioning staff does such a great job. And the former coaches, I love Joe Tereshinsky and John Casey and Dave Van Hallinger. Those guys all just did so much for Georgia. And this staff of Scott Sinclair, that's almost one of those situations where he's done such a good job building these guys up. Holyfield's one of the few guys that can almost come out as a negative because he comes here as ripped as he is already. It's like, gosh, I mean, you know, I mean, what else can I do here?
Yeah, I know.
It's like, I don't want this guy getting out of shape on my watch. There's almost more pressure on you if you're a strength coach when there's a guy who comes in looking like that.
Yeah, then you're just getting to the point where he looks like one of those bodybuilders.
That Evander Holyfield's got somebody.
Yeah, I wouldn't know about that. What do you mean?
You like
why would I know about that?
Man, he's a good fighter and all.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't like him. You know, like him. All right, moving on in today's 5 at 5, Jeff.
Yes.
There is, we've got an overrated, underrated poll that was put out by anonymous college football coaches. The top overrated coaches were Willie Taggart, James Franklin, Kirk Ferentz, and Lane Kiffin. The top under
is Lane Kiffin overrated? I mean,
I think he's underrated.
I mean, finally,
he's done unbelievable at FAU.
Yeah, anyways,
the most underrated coach: David Shaw, Chris Peterson, Dan Mullen, Pat Fitzgerald, and Kyle Whittingham.
Okay.
The top vote getters there.
I would take Shaw out of that list.
Shaw was one of, I think there were three coaches that made both overrated and underrated lists. And
sense.
Shaw was David Shaw, Tom Herman, and Kirk Ferentz were the three coaches that got votes in both being overrated and underrated.
Like for the under, I don't consider Chris Peterson underrated. I think most people think he's like a top five, top 10 coach in the country, don't you?
Yes, absolutely.
So I wouldn't consider him. I think Kyle Whittingham's a guy who's underrated. That guy's had incredible success at Utah. And didn't you think, like, when they went in the Pac-12, like, okay, they're going to kind of fall back and be like a 5-7 team? They have been as competitive as anybody, you know, save USC these last 2 years in that division.
Well, like, sometimes I think, too, where, you know, the idea that Dan Mullen is underrated, like, well, no, he's not. Florida hired him.
Exactly.
And
I don't
even
consider him underrated either.
No. I mean, maybe if he was still at Mississippi State and nobody was hiring him for a bigger job, then he'd be underrated, but he's now the head coach at the University of Florida, and that's where
the guy got Mississippi State to number one in the country. Yeah,
and if he had done that and been stuck in Starkville, then I'd be like, yes, that guy is underrated. He should be coaching at a bigger place.
Like,
but now he is.
Like, that is it? Neil Brown,
who's at Troy?
Yeah,
yes.
Like, that's an underrated coach.
Yes, who hung with Clemson and then did win at LSU last year.
Correct,
but like he. You know, this last coaching cycle, I didn't even feel like he really got a sniff.
I know.
But maybe he's just hanging on for Kentucky because that's where he played.
Could be. Whittingham, to me, is a guy who's at the top of the list. Like, I think he's really, really, really good.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you one, too, that I think is the Ken, I won't attempt to pronounce his last name, at Navy.
Oh, no question.
Yes.
Oh, and Nate, and the thing is, too, he can, with the offense he runs, they're in a pretty good spot. You know, they've had him for a while.
Well, and I guess it was Arizona that maybe reached out to him, and then, I mean, there was something where Khalil Tate put out some tweet about, I didn't come here to run the wishbone
right,
or something.
Well,
and
that's fine.
Yeah.
No, so I would say Whittingham, Ken from Navy.
Navy Ken.
Going to keep on working. Navy Ken's a good one there.
Who would be the most underrated in the SEC?
Well, I think, you know, everybody knows how good Saban – Kirby's obviously the up-and-coming superstar. Malzahn's been solid. God, there have been so much turnover.
You know, my guy, I love me Derek Mason.
Covering machine for you. I think, you know,
he's probably going to get canned, though.
I think Mark Stoops is okay. God, like, the last 2 years, there's been so much turnover. It's hard to – is there anybody? I mean,
you know
Chad
who I think
Morris
it might potentially is
Luke?
Is Matt Luke, yes.
Could be.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was going to kind of.
I'm expecting big things out of Ole Miss this fall.
But I'm like you. I don't
including
think.
Including a cover against Bama in week three.
I'm like you. I don't think Mullen's underrated. He got Mississippi State to number one, and he got the Florida job.
Well, it's like one of these coaches, and maybe that's why they want to stay anonymous. It's because they like they sound like big dummies. But like one of them with James Franklin said, when he got the job, I thought, man, he's a good marketer. He did a nice job with that. It'll be interesting without Saquon Barkley. He's underrated. Like. He was the second pick of the NFL draft. That would be the opposite of being underrated.
Right. That's like one of my favorite, and I get it, it's everybody against the world, was still that wonderful citizen, Jameis Winston, when they beat Auburn to win the national title as a 13-0 undefeated team who had been favored in every game and went into that game as a 9.5-point favorite, saying nobody gave us a chance. No, actually, Jameis, everybody gave you a chance. Everybody thought you were going to win every game.
Yeah. And they
but
did.
But I love it. Oh, this guy is underrated. Well, he was a second pick in the draft.
Yeah. And then like, one of the knocks on Willie Taggart was that, well, he only coached at Oregon for 1 year and, you know, gets the job at Florida State. And, you know, you're supposed to have won for a long time before you get that job. And it's like, well Jimbo Fisher had never coached.
I know.
Before he got the job.
He'd never been a head coach.
And by the way, the answer for me on the most overrated coach in the SEC, he's it.
Ding.
And maybe the country.
Ding.
Because how much is he getting paid? A lot.
10 years, $75 million.
Yeah, he's the most overrated coach in the country. Jimbo.
I don't know if he is. Probably not underrated. Maybe a guy who's not talked about enough is Gary Patterson. That program was beyond morbid, and they have been a double-digit winning machine. I mean, here's one we always like to go back. If somebody would have told you in, like, 1995 that TCU was going to win the Rose Bowl one day, I mean, come on.
Well, I'll give you an underrated coach. Because this guy's top five, Bill Snyder.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's the program. He is the program.
He's the program, and there's no coach where the difference between his career winning percentage and the school's all-time career winning percentage is that wide of a gap.
Because that's the thing. I mean, Florida has got Spurrier and Meyer. You know, Alabama, now you got the Bear and Saban, plus Wallace Wade and Frank Thomas. You know, Auburn's got Jordan and Dye and Tuberville. You know, Georgia's got Butts and Dooley, and, you know, Coach Donnan's in the Hall of Fame, Coach Richt, and now Kirby. You get the picture.
Right. I mean, there's been a lot of guys who have been successful coaches at Georgia. There have been, you know, for Jimbo, won a national championship at Florida State.
Bobby
with Bobby
Bowden.
Bowden had done, it's a place you can win. But Kansas State was a place that there was never any winning.
No. I mean, you think about a place like USC, we had Howard Jones and Robinson and McKay and – of course, Pete Carroll. But, yeah, Kansas State, it was between K-State and Rutgers. And this was old school Division 1A when there weren't like 130 schools. It was like 80-something. As to who had the lowest winning percentage. They were kind of going back and forth for a couple of years, all time.
Right.
Then that guy comes in there. And, you know, within a decade, those guys were in the Big 12 championship game with a shot to play for the national title.
Yeah. All right, moving on in the 5-on-5, here's this quote. If you had the number one recruiting class in the country every year, you'd win like Nick Saban. He shows up at every single game with a better roster than the teams he's playing. If you count cheating and getting the best players in the country as part of running a program, he's the best in the country. It's like saying an NFL coach is the best coach in the league if he gets 25 first-round picks every year. Jeff, is that a fair criticism of Saban? Now, we're not the biggest Saban fans.
No.
We like to point out that his last name is one letter away from being Satan, and he was born on Halloween.
That is correct.
But is that a fair criticism from somebody anonymous to actually accuse him of flat-out cheating to get the best players in the country?
By the way, that anonymous coach, his handle on Twitter is Sug Auburn's on.
Yeah.
His
name is Dat Pie.
That's one of those, I just think like on Twitter, you suck.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's very bold for an, I'd be scared to say that even anonymous, because you know, whoever had that, somebody knows who said it. I would just be scared that that would get out there.
Yeah. I mean, it wouldn't be Gus, would it?
No, it's Sug Eagleson.
Yeah. What about Urban Meyer? Would he say something like that?
He might.
Yeah. Dabo wouldn't say – he wouldn't go there.
No, Dabo.
Kirby wouldn't go there.
No.
What about Mullen? I could see Mullen going there.
Kind of poking the bear.
Yeah.
Orgeron wouldn't go there. You couldn't understand. What if Jimbo said that?
Jimbo could have said that. I could see that. I could see Jimbo being the one that said it. Yeah, let's make a list of the guys we think would have said that.
All right, let's come with five real quick. Lance.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Lance could have said – would have said that.
Jimbo.
Yeah.
Malzahn. Hugh Freeze doesn't count anymore.
Well, he tried to hire. I mean, Saban wanted to hire him. It wouldn't be Butch Jones.
No.
Because he's an intern. They wouldn't be talking to him anyway.
What if it was a guy
What if
like
it was it Pruitt? Could it have been Pruitt?
Yes. And then I'll give you a fifth one. A guy like Dan Toney, like at Michigan State or something. God, that guy, they just.
Yeah. Harbaugh?
There you go.
Would Harbaugh have gone there?
Better. It's Harbaugh.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
All right,
very nice.
Finally, Jeff, we'll wrap up the 5-on-5. The Braves play tonight, trying to avoid a fifth straight loss. They were swept by the Rockies at home. Jeff, after getting swept by the Rockies at home, should we be worried all of a sudden about the Braves?
Yes. They're still, to me, the team to beat in the division, but – you know, they TCB'd, they beat the bad team, the Marlins, like they were supposed to. And like you said, a couple of those games with the Rockies certainly could have gone their way. The other thing with Colorado, and I get it this year, their road splits are much better than their good teams in the past. But to lose at home four games, you got to get at least one against Colorado and Atlanta.
Well, it's what the Braves, honestly, they've been since about
they're 500.
The beginning of the middle of June is they've been a 500 team, and that's what they were last week. They won four and lost four. Now they've got the Pirates tonight, and then they go to Miami this weekend. I mean, they got to win those four games again, and you'll kind of be all right. But I guess for me, it was just if you're a Braves fan and you think, like, you know what, I'm not content with this team just being here a year earlier than we thought, and I think this team's got as good a shot as any in the National League to make the World Series, the bullpen.
To blow a 3-0 lead with two on and nobody out, that you just can't.
Yeah. I mean, Swanson made a bad error Thursday, but the bullpen blew that game. Then the bullpen blew – so, I mean, Saturday's game was ridiculous, though, to be up 3-0 and have the bases empty and two outs and somehow lose that game is.
I mean, you think about this: if they win those two and split that series, they're 2.5 up now.
Yeah, yeah, because the Phillies are busy losing to the Mets three times, including last night. What was actually a cool scene.
It's awesome.
In Williamsport.
Did you see they went to one of the Little League games, too? They took the buses over.
Oh, did they?
They were there because Emily and I were – we went to church and watched it. We're watching at lunch, and they had the Little League World Series on. And, yeah, the bus – Mr. Met and the Philly Fanatic were there. It was terrific.
Well, I saw, like, DeGrom and Syndergaard sat in like the stands and were signing autographs.
Yes.
Because, I mean, the stadium was obviously big enough for a major league game, but like the seats were just, it was a tiny like stadium. Where, so it was only the little leaguers who were there. And then I even liked in the end, they lined up and shook hands like you do in little league
too. It was great. And they had a, like the guy's nicknames on the back of their jersey, like Todd Frazier, I guess it is. It said the Todd Father on there.
Yeah. Well, and then Syndergaard had Thor.
Thor.
Yeah.
And it did have, like, for the guys, it went back. I watched a little bit of it on ESPN last night. They would come up and say, Chris Brame, favorite superhero, you know, Batman, you know, favorite player growing up, you know, Dale Murphy, like that. It was really neat.
It was cool, yeah. All right, there's the 5 at 5 brought to you by Duplicating Systems, more than a system, a solution.